We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello everybody, hope you're enjoying the snow. What a time. It's made everything look pretty, hasn't it, as we look out of the window from our abode. Hope you're doing alright, hope you're well. I've been alright actually, I've been plugging away. Just doing some things, trying to keep everyone entertained, keep spirits up. And keeping busy to keep my own sanity, really, just to stop myself going a bit loopy. But hope you're doing well out there. Hope everyone's all right. Before we begin, we've got a couple of things to announce. This coming Saturday, we are doing we now have a Twitch channel. Membrane Podcast as a Twitch channel, and on that we're going to have a party on Saturday, February the 13th, pre-Valentine's Day. So Valentine's weekend, a lot of love in the air, and we're going to do a party online. We're going to just spin some tunes, and we're going to have you guys online. So jump up on the links will be up. If you go on my social media, and there'll be all manner of links and stuff. You just got to press them and join in the fun. It's all free. Just get involved, and we'll have some drinks. We'll wear some funny hats, and we'll have a nice time. So that's February 13th. It's Membrane Podcast is the Twitch handle. That's all you got to do. Go on to Twitch, put that into the search thing. You'll find us. We'll find you, and we'll have a lovely time. So do that for us. That'd be great. Thank you for all your continued support. Thank you for your subscribing to us. If you haven't already, please do so. That does push us up the charts, gets this into more people's ears, and then gets the word out. That's what it does. So thank you for that. Thank you to our wonderful Patreons again for helping us keep the lights on. I am actually going to do that thing I said I'd do, and I'm going to find you, and I'm going to interview a few of you for a proper episode just for you. Also, we've got some reviews coming in from T Smith 1978. Is it Smith or Smythe? It's with a Y. I'm assuming Smith. I might be wrong. Well done. Well done, says T. Smith, T. Smythe, 1978. Thank you so much. Excellent as well from Mrs. P.W. Ah, thank you, Mrs. P.W. Is that Mrs. Paul Weller? You never know. Thank you very much. That's lovely. And we've got a great listen, and that's from Blake Republic. Thank you so much. Dan, if you would like to do that, drop us a 5-star review. Get involved. It's always nice to hear from you, and lovely to see that you're enjoying what we do. Thank you so much. Also, the Tuned Up Time Machine. Don't forget that. We've got the Tuned Up Time Machine on Mixcloud and Spotify. Jump up on that. The radio show that producer Paul and I whack out. It's some classic tunes along with some current bangers. It's a great show. You're going to love that as well. Anyway, on with the show. This week's guest, one of my favourite comics. I've worked with him many times. I've known him many years. He's a fantastic comedian. One of my favourites. He's an absolute joy to watch. Every time I've worked with him has been pure joy. Gavin Webster, fantastic. I urge you to go and look at his stuff. He's so funny, very talented man. And I've been meaning to get him on for ages, and I just hadn't got around to it. He's one of those, you know, who should I get on? You never know, and you're like, oh, are they going to say yes? And Gav did. He did. I said, do you want to come on? He went, yeah, of course. So he did, and we had a great, great chat. We talked about, you know, growing up, you know, as working class men in a changing world, you know, how we adapt, how we're adapting to what's going on, these super fast changes that are happening. And I think we're doing all right. We're getting there. You know, we're still making mistakes, but we're getting there. This is a great chat. We have a wonderful comedian. You're going to love this one. I'm so glad he came on. So coming up in a bit is Gavin Webster.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
It's good to hear your voice, Gav.
Oh, likewise, man. You know, we don't. None of us mix anymore now, do we, really? Apart from on things like this.
It's a shame, isn't it? It's a real shame. I said this before. Put a thing on Facebook where it wasn't just the gigs getting taken away, it was the fact we lost our community.
Yeah.
And we lost our little world, didn't we? Where we'd all bump into each other and have a meal.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, we work just as hard as other people do in other jobs, but in a different way. In our hard working was the Saturday nights and having to go and drive to places and like get stuff together, and then we'd relax in the right times. I don't know when's the right time to kick back and relax anymore now, because you just got all this time and you don't know what to make of it all, really, do you?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. It's like you had a purpose at the end of the day. You were like, all right, I don't mind sitting around on my arse all day because I'm doing that. I've got to drive to Leeds tonight.
Yeah.
So you just kind of, that was you. You go, oh, no, I can sit and have a cup of tea now because I've got to do that.
And you had your own time to decide, but, you know, if you were putting new material together or writing something, you do that, then you finish. But, like, people in jobs now, they have to go to a place and stay there until they're told to go home. Can't get my head around that, you know?
No, I haven't done that for years. Having to do the, I mean, when this was like, all right, I better get myself a job. And then I'm doing the, I'm having to do interviewing things. And I just have, not that I don't have any respect for them, but it's those old questions of like, so what attracted you to this? You know, like,
yeah, I need the money.
I don't want to work here.
Yeah.
I've got to pretend I want to work in a dog food factory. Yeah, well, this has been the dream.
That's right, yeah. And they must know that you're bullshitting, and they know that you know, but you've got to still go through the rigmarole of pretending that you're not, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Because when we were younger, coming out of school and having to apply for jobs, it kind of felt, you know, you're like, oh, God, it's good. Oh, God, I've got to make something up, pretend I want this. This is the job of the it's what I want to do, and blah, blah, blah. Whereas now, because we're older and you've seen behind the curtain. So now you can go, oh, fuck off, mate. You don't even want to be here. This is your last chance saloon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. You can see the deadness behind the eyes of the person interviewing you. I know what you mean. even though they've got to go through all them silly cliche phrases that you thought was real years ago, like saying, well, you know, if you play fair by us, we'll play fair by you, and things like that. They've got to talk in that stupid way. And you go, oh, mate, you said that to everybody, man.
Yeah, and he's sitting there on a giant ball instead of a chair. And he's going, I can't take you seriously, mate. You look like a seal. Fuck off.
That's fucking good material, that, actually. I would laugh at that. Oh, well, wow. I genuinely would.
Well, I'll tell you, well, you've been busy, though, because you've got your, you've been doing your online, your thing, your sitcom.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did it before lockdown. It was there. It was just in there. I didn't know what to do with it, really. And then I put it out on Vimeo, but not many people watched it on Vimeo. Just a few people did, like, but I've put it out on Amazon Prime, and it's like, fucking hell, the amount of people that watch it, like, because, not because it, I don't think it's causing a splash or anything, it's just the amount of people that watch stuff like Amazon Prime to start with. Like, you've just got a much bigger advantage than if you're putting it out privately, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. That's it. It's there's so much stuff out there, and it's not, they might not see your stuff, not because it's not good, it's just because it's just so
there
much.
There is so much.
And that's the, and this is a world we're now trying to wade into.
I know, but you're doing well with this, though, aren't you? You must have found a niche audience that like this now, with all the people that watch it, listen to it.
Yeah, I was lucky. I was lucky to start it before all this.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm really lucky that I got it, that we did it before. I would have been, I don't know if I would even be able, if I wouldn't even know where to start, I think, in amongst all this other shit that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, did you...
It's really been a lifesaver.
Has your numbers gone up since lockdown?
Yeah. The numbers are always going up. Mm-hmm. It's been really good. And now, because that was the other thing as well, because like Jade was like, you've got to keep pushing it. You've got to keep pushing it on the social medias.
And
I was like, oh, but I don't want to bore people with it. I keep pushing it. But it does, you have to do it. It does work.
Yeah, it does actually, doesn't it? It's hard to have to, as you say, you just get your in your mind what you'd be saying, thinking, oh, God, he's still on about this fucking thing. But, you know, it's not really for you, if you know what I mean. You know, it's not, you're not impressing Rich Wilson, are you? You know what I mean? It's loads of other people. And if there's going to be one or two people going, oh, listen to him fucking going on about that thing or whatever, it doesn't matter because, you know, Jimmy Carr's and that don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? And that's why they get on. They're not bothered about what somebody on the circuit might be thinking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true. Yeah. I know, you're right, man. Yeah, that's what you've got to rise above and not worry about it. And he says, you're not being a prick. You're just trying to
I think any intelligent person would realise that. Look, this isn't like my mate. This is like what he's trying to do to earn a living. You know, it's like it's like you wouldn't say that to a car salesman. Oh, have you heard him? Oh, there's not many miles on the clock. Oh, it's a good runner. You fucking prick. And you go, look, this is what I've got to do to sell them.
Yeah. Oh, look at him with his banners on the front of his...
That's right, and his bloody suit and his... Oh, hello, can I help you? Fucking prick. He doesn't speak like that down the pub. And you go, yeah, because he's at work. That's what he does.
Oh, man, it's true. So when you... Did you grow up in Newcastle?
Yeah. Well, Tyneside,
And it was... Did you... Because when I was at school, it was just... There wasn't really any talk of uni and career. It was just get a job, any job. Just as long as you can get something, just go and do something. And I don't know, was that the same with you?
Well, yeah, I suppose. there wasn't many jobs when I left school. There was a lot of unemployment in the 80s. And it was, if you can get on it, in my day it was called a YTS scheme, but before that was a YOP scheme.
Oh, yeah.
And I got on a YTS, but... wasn't any the apprenticeships were all but finished, and it was there wasn't really much happening really when we left school. You know, I left school in 86, I think. Yeah, in fact.
Yeah.
Why am I saying I think?
When you see someone who was born in the year 2000.
Yeah.
You're like, you can fuck off, mate.
Yeah, it's always very telling, isn't it, when somebody's born in a decade that you can remember being like over the hill in that decade. Never mind being a kid or a teenager. You're actually sort of past your best when they were born, you know.
I did the YTS.
Did you?
It was 30 quid a week. I was
Is that
on.
What it was? I was on 27.30.
Yeah.
I think in your second year, because you did 2 year YDSs, which looking back, it's disgusting, really. That was 35 quid in your second year, but in your first year, it was £27.30. That's what it was.
Jesus. Yeah. And you tell people, I was like, my mum used to say, so where's your money going? Like, what do you mean, where's it going? I'm a teenager on 30 quid a week.
Where's your money
going? Where do you think it's going?
I know, I worked in an engineering firm, and I was on a YTS, and they topped up your money. And then I think I got took on by them. And I was on £1 an hour, so I was on £39 a week, right? But what they encouraged you to do was work overtime, you know, time and a third, and then you did Saturday mornings, time and a half, and on Sunday you got double time and all that. And you worked like a dog. Looking back, they were just completely exploiting you, doing manual sort of jobs. You weren't even learning stuff. You had stuff like sewing metal bars and labouring and all that. And I remember the foreman was arguing about how some of the young ones aren't, you know, the manager fetched the foreman up and says, some of the young'uns, they're not even pulling their weight, they're not even trying. And he was saying, because they're bored, you know, they're bored at what they're doing. And I remember apparently the boss said to the foreman, he told me this, he says, some of these young people, right, you know, some of these kids, these teenagers, man, some of them are on £100 a week. And like, as though it was a lot of money. And also for the £100 a week, well, we're having to work, you know, like, 75 hours now after, you know, like we're killing ourselves for £100 a week, as though it was 1962 or something. This is like 1987, 88, you know, and you look back, we're just terribly exploited, you know,
And you're supposed to be pleased as well.
Yeah, like grateful.
Pleased for the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity, Mr. Whoever. it's horrible. But obviously that is a different era now, because maybe down south, first of all, but then throughout the country, in not long a time, it changed from being a manual-based economy, manufacturing that, to more commercial-based economy. And those days were gone within the next 5-10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember it changed really so quickly. You had when I was a kid, the mines, mm-hmm. so the miners were all put out of work, and then you had the shipbuilders, mm-hmm. and then they were going, and then on the news, like, oh, unemployment's going through the roof. And you're like, yeah, it's like now with all the pandemic, everyone's going, oh, dude, unemployment figures are mad. And you're like, yeah, we've all lost our jobs. What are you looking at? There was always this surprise in the media that there's no jobs. And it's like, what are we supposed to do? They go, oh, yeah, you can go and do something else. But there's been, like, the shipbuilders, that's all, that was generations, wasn't it? That wasn't just some fellas. That was like granddad, dad, son, were all in that industry.
Yeah, so it's like, it's not, there's people in the north or in, I don't know, South Wales or, you know, the Clyde in Scotland. For some reason, they have this idea of saying, well, you know, if you're that way inclined, if you're technically inclined, then you'll do well at them things. And if you're not, if you're more artistic, you'll do other things. You go, it doesn't mean, how come people in the north looked as though they were more technically inclined? Well, they didn't. It's because that's all there was. So that's what they did.
Yeah.
And like, you know, if you're from an area where it's not like that, like people that are from Norwich, right, or from Great Yarmouth or that area, they're not born with DNA which makes them partial to working in Norwich Union, you know, Aviva, because apparently I heard a statistic in the 80s that every school leaver with more than two O-levels or would be able and lived in the Norwich area could work in Norwich Union, because they're that big an insurance company. But it's not as though people like they're much more hardwired to be able to do that. It's just because that's what the employment opportunity is in that area. It's not like people that live in, you know, South Yorkshire or County Durham are much better at going down holes in the ground and operating, gelignite to blast open holes. It's
it's in their DNA.
Of course, he's from there. He's born loving ships because he lives in Wall's End on Tyne. He just loves building ships. it's nonsense, isn't it? It's you know the people are given jobs in a place because that's what there is. You're not. Drawn towards working in a nuclear plant because you worked in, you know, somewhere like, I don't know, Chernobyl or wherever it is. You know, you just, that's what the employment is in that area, and you do it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, the people of Oxford on the Cowley Road weren't partial to building Austin Allegro's.
Being on an assembly lane at a whatever it is, Ford plant or something. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
He's took to it so well.
It's in his blood. He can't help himself. He was always building mini metros when he was at school.
It's not even so much an Oxford thing, it's a Cowley thing.
That specific council estate.
Yes, right. It's a good job we didn't move, because he probably would have lost those skills when he was six.
Yeah, down in Brighton building mini metros. He just wouldn't. He'd be lost, wouldn't he? He'd be lost.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? And what I like about your comedy is. There is some of the things I've watched you over many years, and there's an assumption that people from a working class background don't understand what's going on. Whereas I was listening to you, and I'm like, we absolutely know what's going on. That we have to know what's going on so we can take the piss out of it. There's this assumption that we're all thick idiots that should be working in factories, but we do understand what's going on.
Yeah, well, I mean,
what's happening, and
I think most people do. Some people don't articulate it in the traditional way as people would like to articulate things. You know, not everybody's Stephen Fry or whatever, but you still get people still understand what's going on and understand that they're being like used and exploited in a certain way, because that's the nature of. That's the nature of living on a capitalist country. I'm not like a raving communist or anything, but that's how it works, doesn't it? You're used for your labour, or you're used for those particular reasons, depending upon what you eat.
Well, it is. I've said this on here before, and they're talking about the HS2 line and the widening motorways, and they're making apartments smaller, and you're like, yeah, they're just turning everyone into worker bees. They're making everything, all the avenues to get to work, they're making them bigger.
Oh, that's a good point.
So you can get to work quicker and make more money for the people.
That's a good point.
You know, and if you drop dead, so there'll be someone to take your place.
Yeah, and they kind of sell it to people that's what they want. Yes, we'd like to be nearer our workplace and get there quicker, and we'd like to have a very small apartment right next to the railway lines. It's almost like, I can't believe I didn't realise that's what I wanted, but it's always the same. I always feel that's the thing, that they tell people what they want, so people... I'm not saying people are stupid, but people kind of believe it. You know, if you tell people that's what they're aspiring to, they go, yeah, I suppose I must be, really.
Yeah. But that's it. A lot of us, we do. Human beings do need to be told sometimes, not told, but kind of guided in a certain way. But what's happened is that people in charge have manipulated that now. They've gone, okay.
And they're much more subtle about it now, aren't they, than what they used to be. Yeah. I think they've realised that. And, a bit like how marketing uses, philosophy and I presume psychologists and things to put way near where the fish is and things like that. So you knew that things like psychology would get used in an evil way at some point, wouldn't you? And they go, well, they tell people that they really want this. And they probably will say, yeah, we do want this, actually.
Yeah, like you say, it's that, if I live, I don't need a big apartment, I'm hardly ever there because I'm at the job that I love.
That's right, the job that I definitely love. Yeah, I think it's marvellous.
I love this. Yeah, no, I just get rid of my apartment, I'll just live at the office. Well, that's what's happened now, isn't it? Now with this working from home.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
Now you're in it. You can't. I was on something just earlier, and we were talking about it made me laugh when people were putting on at Christmas out of office things on their emails. And you go, no, you're not. You're at home. We're all at home. We're all stuck.
Yeah, that's right. What's this? And if they think they can make more money out of you like that, then they'll start accentuating the positives of it. Going, hey, just whenever you want to stop and have a cup of tea, you can. They'll spin it into a positive way, won't they? You know what I mean?
And now they're going, oh, you don't need to go abroad on holiday. You can have a holiday in your flat. Just have a.
It's like the
just go to another room.
You know the 0 hours contract. You know that's the. I don't agree with it, but it's the nature of society, right? This is how it works, right? But I hate the way they try and make it like a positive. They go, Some people like it. Some people like the flexibility. Some people like the. Some people don't want to be tied down, and they like the flexibility. You think, oh, come on, stop pretending that it's for everybody's benefit when really it's for an employer's benefit. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like you say, if we, at school, like we were saying earlier, when you it got to like it was like the third year in senior school, and they go right, okay, now you've got to start making choices. Like, what are you going to do? And these are the things that you could probably do. There was no kind of talk of going into the arts or there was no kind of, they didn't really look at you, oh, he's actually really good at that. Why don't we kind of nudge him in that direction? It was always like, boys do business. Women don't have to choose a career because they're going to have kids anyway.
Yeah, it'd be too much, I don't know, too much of a faff and too much like some work for a teacher to do and then a careers officer to actually take people in individually and ask them what they want to do. Much better to do them en masse, you know, much better to lump them into four different bags, really. You know, that's a lot easier for them, an easier job for them. And unless somebody was phenomenal, where they might be like at a state school and they're good enough to go to Cambridge, yeah, they'll spend time on them, but that's only for the benefit of the school looking good, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Well, that's like all of these things, isn't it? All these exams, it's just all about the numbers, making sure the school looks good. And we had open days and parents were going to be bringing their kids to the school so they'd get shown around, and any problem kids would get shoved in the school hall. Go and play football or something. Just get them out of the way.
That reminds me of when Newcastle failed, actually, is Liverpool won it for the European City of Culture, and Liverpool won that, and they did have a good campaign because they made it about people, and the Europeans liked that, and that they needed some infrastructure and help. But apparently the Newcastle one, because it came second, it was, I've spoken to a couple of people, I've spoken to somebody, should I say her name, Miranda Sawyer. I'll say her name because there's nothing derogatory about what she said or any underhand. She was on the committee and she said the Newcastle campaign was good, but it was just a bit too good and too slick, and making out that it was some super duper space age come massively cultural highbrow place that it wasn't. And apparently halfway through, one of them went, "When can we meet a jury?" Because what they've done is they've took them all to all these posh buildings and these nice areas, these art galleries, and the campaign was like saying, "Please get these heathens out of the way while we formulate our bid." And their eyes were being shoved to these posh places, and they didn't meet any people as such, you know. And I think that's what did it in the end, because the Liverpool one was, you know, they pushed the whole thing of what Scouse humour and Scousers and things like that. They did what they would, what obviously the committee wanted to see in here, but Newcastle thought, no, we'll avoid that like the plague. And that's the same thing as the parents' night, isn't it? So shove these morons out the way while we pretend that we're something that we're not.
Yeah, I know. And like you say, and if you're just honest about it, like Liverpool showed you more, because there's this Manchester, Liverpool, not Manchester, but Liverpool, Newcastle, like, there is more of a sense of togetherness and community. It feels, as an outsider, I might be wrong there, but being down here in London, there's fucking London don't give a shit. London doesn't even give a shit. It doesn't care.
Well, it's very big, isn't
it,
London? That's part of the problem, if you can call it a problem. It's very big and it's a capital city. And I've never liked that thing when Northerners say, you go down to London and nobody talks to you. Well, of course they don't. It's a capital city, you know. What are you going to do? Strike up a conversation with a Mexican ambassador when you're on the tube, when you've got your overalls on, going, "Yeah, right. Sorry, I don't know."
sandwich.
We are very busy. We are going formulating a bid for some sort of somebody's extradition or something like that. You know what I mean? What's the matter with you, mate? Jeez, what is it with this? What is it with this town? Mate, it's a capital city. Or somebody's really busy going to work in the city, and somebody's got something on at the BBC, and think, you know, it's a huge, it's a different kettle of fish to, I don't know, Huddersfield or something, isn't it?
It's true. It is this because it's because London doesn't care if you can keep up with it.
Yeah.
There's a like, oh, you're hanging on by your fingertips to stay in it. You feel like, and what's this? The thing is, what's happened with this virus shit? Suddenly people have gone, oh, I don't actually need to be in London.
Right.
I can go elsewhere. I can be elsewhere and do this.
That's interesting.
So there's like 700,000 people have left London.
Is that pretty much the figures?
Yeah. Just people going, no, I don't need to be there now. So whereas before it used to be, even in our industry, people were like, oh, I've got to be in London because I'll get on the telly and shit like that. And now, you know, well, Jade has conversations with people and about TV things, and they're like, oh, we don't want to be London-centric. We want to come out more and do stuff in, say, Newcastle or Liverpool. Yeah. It's starting to happen. We need more regional things.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I don't know whether their intentions are honourable or not, but I don't care. You know, it's a bit like when Radio 4, they get it all wrong, Radio 4, they go, we're trying to be more blue-collar. And first of all, blue-collar, again, what we've already touched upon it. Like, that's about 35 years out of date, first of all. And secondly, like, why don't you just employ funny people? You don't have to say that we've got something, you know, it's like saying we need more women. You go, I tell you what, why don't you just go and see the funny women? There's plenty of them, and use them. You don't need to have some drive to get more women in. You know, just find some funny ones and find some funny blokes and find some funny working class people. And, you don't have to have it. It doesn't have to be labelled as some sort of you know, new direction.
I know. And it's, just go and find the fun. There's loads of people. I see it all the time. You're like, no, there's loads of funny people out there. Go and have a look for them. There's loads. It's like they talk about diversity and you go, you know, oh, we need more black people to do this, that and the other. You go, well, go to there's the black circuit. Mm-hmm. Go and see those people. There's thousands.
Yeah.
But you're not. You're just looking at what's in front of you.
Absolutely. Sounds controversial, but people with attitude. Go to the black circuit, find the funniest one. There you go, there's a good start. The one that's really funny and innovative and interesting, and I bet you there will be one that'll stick out like a sore thumb. You go, God, they're good. Use them. Doesn't matter how much of a editorial they've got, or whether they're a bit bullshit. Doesn't matter, or not, as the case may be. Just get the funniest one.
Yeah. That's it, get the funniest people. I don't understand what the problem is.
It's not difficult, is it?
It's fucking easy. Come on, man. but it's funny, with this podcast, it's what it kind of evolved. I didn't start off with, oh, I'm going to do mental health. It kind of just tumbled into that and became that. And it's a nice safe space. I spoke on the one earlier. It's almost like a therapy session for me, as well as the people I have on. It's like I get to get stuff off of my chest and ask questions that I wouldn't normally ask. And it's growing up, you kind of, I don't know, there wasn't any, my dad was pretty cool. He was always like, you just got to find your own way. And, you know, but there wasn't really any talk of feelings. And it wasn't until I was older and I realised that, oh yeah, my dad was just blagging it as well. You know, it was again, like we say, people with the technology going, oh, yeah, just do this, that, and the other. And you're like, fuck, how does everyone else know how to do it? And I don't. Because they're all blagging it. And that was the same growing up. It was like, you know, everyone was going, oh, yeah, you've got to be stiff upper lip and be a man and grow up here and do this and do that. And really, they were just fucking broken inside.
Yeah, I'm writing a book, actually, at the minute. I don't know whether I'll put it out yet or wait a while, but I've got a book. It was part of the Edinburgh show, which is called Buddhism and Other Such Rubbish. And what the story behind the book is, it's about people who wax lyrical about things they know very little about. It's about people I worked with, people in our industry, of course, as well, people that you meet, family members, everything. They all seem to tell you about how this works and how that industry works and what those people are like. And they've never read one bloody book on the subject, you know what I mean? Tell you all about how this happens and how people tell you about show business when they don't know you're in show business, and they get it all wrong, don't they? And it's all sorts of things like that. And they tell you about how conventions work, and nobody knows. You know, I don't think I could have that confidence to tell you all about, You know, when somebody talks about, say, you know, an emotive subject like the Arab is, you know, the Arab-Palestine conflict, my first, I don't know about you, Rich, but my first reaction is if somebody says, what do you think? I go, to be honest with you, mate, I've not actually read one book on the subject. I've just seen stuff around the world all my life and seen two opposing views. How could I even begin to give you my considered opinion on a subject like that? Hardly anyone says that, though, do they? People say, well, I'll tell you what the problem is. You're going, oh, really? So how many books have you read on it? How long have you lived in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem? No, you haven't. And they've got so much to fucking say, yet they get found out because they get onto the one or two sort of sub-subjects that you may know about, you know? I don't know. Fucking rave culture or I don't know, fucking classic cars or, you know, something that somebody might be into. And they start talking, you go, well, actually, your mail's out there. You've got it all wrong.
Yeah, and it only takes, I see, you see all the time, didn't you, they'll gobbing off, they'll make some comment on social media, but then someone will come in who has done the reading, and not only are they going, actually you're wrong, but they've also got the links,
at their fingertips, are they going, who are you then? Going, well, I'm actually a doctor. They go, very clever answer. You know what I mean?
Typical doctor.
Oh, very clever argument.
Oh, you're arrogant. And then they try and find some dirt on this doctor going, oh, look, he cheated on his wife in 1952. Right. He's a scumbag.
That's always a one, wasn't it? That was always, you know, there was a thing years ago. I think it was when Rebecca Brooks was the editor of The Sun. The big thing that came in, you know, back in the old days, they were like quite homophobic. They were saying, he's gay, and that would end a career. But then later on, she would talk about love rat so-and-so says we should be doing this. Well, he's a love rat. And because it appeals to a lot of women, they go, yeah, I'm not listening to him. He cheated on his wife. And you go, yeah, but can we not just hear what he's got to say about, you know, about the fire brigades union or something like that? And go, no, I'm not listening to a word he says because he went with another woman. And you go, they know how to kind of say the ultimate thing that would render somebody defunct in what they're saying. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it happens all the time that you can't listen to these people because he did that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But he had some really interesting views. He's very insightful on this very subject that we're talking
about. Yeah, which is
all
I'm interested in at this particular moment in time,
Yeah, but he did that. All right. And then you just get bored. You go, oh.
I know. It's like when, you know, when you're talking about being on the circuit and you're talking to somebody, they go, who were you on with last night? Oh, well, I was on with so-and-so. No, him. And you go, look, I'm just telling you who I was on with. And we met up for lunch with thingy, and they were saying, oh, I can't stand him. And you go, yeah, but I'm just telling you what they said about something else. It's important that we get this out. Don't just save your editorials till the end of what you think of that particular person. You know, otherwise you can't get a conversation done.
No. I've had it before. They go, why are you gigging with him? I'll get that. They'll see a lineup picture. Oh, you're gigging with him? Yeah, I didn't put the bill together. That's just how it was. But these are the things that bother me, that, you know, people think, oh, he doesn't give a shit. I do give a shit. This shit keeps me up at night. The injustices in the world, it fucking bothers me. It's always been the same. But I don't know. I haven't got the answers. I'm just a fucking van driver from Kent.
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't think people are paying us like a massive compliment. I think it's just a delusion. You think, I really feel that you're probably better off getting your energies to the head of comedy at BBC Two to get things to change, or, you know, the person who we all know owns the comedy store to change, rather than one of these boots on the ground people like myself or you. Maybe that's the chip on the shoulder, but as a working class person, you do get this, you know, it's harder for women. You go, I think it's harder for working class women, actually. I think that's the top and bottom of it. I think, you know, I'm sorry, but like the idea that it's, you know, or it may be harder for gay people, maybe harder for a gay working class person. You know, I think they're fundamentally not getting the fact that you switch on Radio 4, more than anything, you don't really hear a working class accent, really. That's the main thing.
No.
For me, I could be wrong, but that's what That's what I feel anyway.
Yeah, true. It's like Jade says, you know, there's when they talk about, there's always talk about the patriarchy and it's a patriarchal world and men are in charge and blah, blah, blah. But Jade says, like, when I was a kid, it was the women were in charge. And it's true. When I was growing up, the women ruled the roost. They were in charge. It was like they told the men to fuck off out of it. Like, just fuck off. I've got shit right. to do. You're getting in my way.
Talking like about a matriarchal family type of thing.
It isn't working class women moaning about it.
That's what we're just saying. It's not working class women moaning about it, but it's working class women.
Working class women are silenced.
There you go.
I am always, this is going to be controversial as well. Working class people, I'm not going to say names obviously, but working class people that are on the television tend to be put into a box of, I can't believe I'm here. It's amazing that I'm here talking to you people, very grateful, you know?
Yeah, you got to doff your cap and go, thanks for letting me into the warmth.
You know, even when there's little male jokes from certain comics going, well, it was a lovely spread backstage. I don't know where the ham and peas pudding was, though. You know, they've got to make little jokes like their little, I mean, I shouldn't really be here. I'm used to a shit buffet, but look at this. It's very posh and I had to find me. Oh, dear. I had to go and get me suit. But...
I had a knife and a fork.
It's like that, isn't it? You know, little me amongst all these posh knobs. Who would have thought it? And you were, fucking hell, that's what we're reduced to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Standing there with your cap, like, scrunched up in your hands, like, oh, thanks for letting me out from under the stairs. Oh.
That's right, yeah.
What are these? Vol-au-vents?
Can I make a little joke about it, how we don't get them in our house? Oh, certainly, that would be great. That'd be really funny.
And if you could put some soot on your eyes, just under on your cheeks there, so it looks like you've been working hard. And just have one of your toes poking out your boot.
Yeah, then... People will really like you, though.
They really warm to you. It was like what I said to you earlier. What I was trying to say is, just because you're working class doesn't mean you don't understand what's going on. You know, you've read a book, you understand stuff. You're an intelligent man, and that comes across in your comedy. And it's this assumption that we're all fucking knobheads, just staring out the window.
Yeah, just, I think a lot of that comes... because of the conditioning as well, it comes from working class people a bit as well. They go, well, we're not supposed to be using big long words, and it's because they've been conditioned to, you know, I was supposed to like filth, so you know, people say, they like the dirty stuff that lot, and you think that's what, because that's all they get thrown at them, so they'll assume that it's just that's all they'll want. But I guarantee you, if you go to a working class audience, they're like, because they don't have a word for surreal, they just think that it's a bit daft and a bit funny, and you know, it's daft stuff and funny jokes, but they don't use the word surreal. But there's loads of working class stuff that's very surreal anyway. You know, the history of the music hall is quite surreal and offbeat, and lots of working class people like that, and it's not just
all that, it's
ownership of,
well, that's people. And the comedy I love is from people that have lived a life, you know, that like people like Dave Allen and people like that, like they did things before comedy, they were in comedy, and that's, you know, that real proper comedy, I feel a decent hilarious comedy comes from someone that's fucking driven a van for 5 years
or
whatever,
digger or something, you know, like that.
That understands how things work on, you know, ground, on the ground level, that kind
of... Yeah, all of Billy Connolly's routines couldn't be done. You could never look at Billy Connolly and not know... If you didn't know his background, you would go, did he just go straight into the theatre from leaving school? You know, of course he fucking didn't. You can just tell by the... Even if he's not said what he did, you can tell by all the people in his routines and the voices and that. You go, you can tell he's out of life, you know.
Yeah. It's all about being in the toilet on the shipyard, and they're just that one trench or whatever it is, that one thing, and everyone's shit's going down.
That's
past each
right.
Other.
Yeah, I remember that. But he wouldn't even need to mention shipyards, would he? He wouldn't even need to touch on any of them subjects. But you can tell by when he does voices of people, you go, yeah, he's lived. Yeah, you can't make that up, or it just wouldn't.
Yeah,
wouldn't wash, would it? Really.
Yeah. We're saying people sort of turn their nose up at Mrs. Brown's Boys, and then I watched it, and I'm like, all right, yeah, it's not great, but it's got a charm, and it's got a realness to it. You know, that kind of working, there's a working class feel, that kind of work, sort of nonsense to the thing. The fact that what's funny is when they corpse and they look at each other and they come out of it and go, right, do you want to try that again? Do you know that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very sort know, of... they're certainly not the first people who have done that, but it's very... I only think that would have been... If a posh person had suggested that years ago, they would have gone with that. But if a working class person had done that, if somebody not from the theatre had said, let's break down the fourth wall and do that 40 years ago, they would have said, oh, don't be ridiculous, you can't do that. I think the fact that he was doing that live for years meant that he could go in, I presume, with a little bit of confidence to say, no, this is how it works. We corpse and we start do the whole thing again. But if he'd gone in with the whole thing on pen and ink, on printed paper and say, this is what happens, they would have shat all over it, wouldn't they? They would have torn it to pieces and said, no, it's a traditional sitcom, you know?
Yeah. Well, then you're right, because you had Hancock's Half Hour would do that as well. When they'd corpse or they'd get the line wrong or the set would shake as they came in the door. And I don't, like you said, I don't think if someone had come straight out of uni into a theatre background, they would have missed all that kind of real.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Monty Python, the great thing about that was they were just given, I think, was it Humphrey Barclay in charge of BBC said, all right then, I've seen what you've got, you've made here, what you've written. I can give you 12 episodes late at night. It wasn't like, we'll do a pilot. I'll do a 10-minute taster, then a pilot, then a second pilot, then, but we need to have our lawyers on this and some of our writers to gag it up. And then imagine if they'd done that, but they didn't. They just went, well, okay, we'll give you a go. And yeah, a lot of it in the early stuff, shit. But the fact that they were given a chance to breathe means that it's, you know, something that defined comedy, you know. But I think nowadays it's more, there's people that don't have a sense of humour or haven't got a history in comedy that are telling you how to write your sketch show or something like that.
Oh, every time. And it's always, you'll get one hit, like Fleabag, and then everyone, in the next 5 years, everyone's like, right, we need another
That's
Fleabag.
That's right, they always do, don't they? Yeah, they miss the whole point, don't they? Yeah.
And then, like, again, Jade will send things in and they go, is it like this? Is it like, no, this is this is my life. This is a story about, from my life, these are the characters in that world, and it's nothing like Fleabag.
Because they're desperate to have... this is Gavin and Stacey meets... What's going to meet? Gavin and Stacey meets The Office. And I don't think they'd ever meet.
Imagine that. What a shit fucking party that would be.
Why have they got to meet? this is... the young ones on acid. And you're like, well, why are they going to be on acid?
Have you seen someone on acid?
In general, the creative juices tend not to flow really on us. They think they are, but you're just going to get a lot of incoherent bullshit from them, really, if you start writing it down. But
the last thing you want is the young ones on acid.
It's fine enough as it is, but they've got to have this, haven't they? It's got to meet this, meets that, and you go, why don't you just look at what somebody's got to say and give it a go? Really, you've wasted enough money already. You know, they go, I don't know whether we could take this to see. Oh, you can't take a chance here. We've got to put it to one side. Maybe do a taster tape. And look at the billions of pounds you've wasted on shite sitcoms. Don't you tell me that, you know, we don't want to take a risk on this fucking low budget stuff.
Yeah, well, the latest thing now is that, we haven't got, like, Channel 4 going, we haven't really got the budget. You go, yeah, you have. You fucking have. Just stop messing around.
Yeah. We haven't got the budget. Because it's a gravy train, really. I mean, you can make a sitcom very cheaply and still make it look good. But, you know, it's all the hangers-on. That's where it costs. Mm. When people see...
Everyone justifying their positions, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. When they go, it's going to be 1.2 mil an episode. What the fuck are you spending that on? What the fuck? Is it going on catering or something? Or does everybody get a hotel even if they live in that town or something? Or is it, you know... Well, what the fucking hell is that money going on?
Yeah.
Fucking and that's just hell. Like your standard sitcom, you know, like, you know, what the fucking, It's eye-watering amounts of money, and without sounding like these right-wing people having a go at the BBC, you go, I'll tell you what, like, you could make thousands of bloody sitcoms if you just reduce the money a bit and, you know...
It's true, yeah, that's true. It's that... Yeah, and it's the and there's a lot of nepotism as well, and you know that comes with it. And this isn't a working class chip on my shoulder like we've said before. It's just the truth, isn't it? If you know, people are more likely to look at something if you're the cousin of somebody or the son of someone rather than you, me rocking up having just left my driver's job in Dartford.
Yeah.
And going, I've got this idea for a sitcom. They go, so? Who the fuck are you?
No, I've heard...
We're going to go with Nigel.
Some great stories about that. There was one that would be too long to tell you, but it's very typical of that. But you get the thing like that... I think what they do in this country is instead of, like, you know, somebody who drives a van who's got a sitcom, instead of going, do you know, maybe something in this, they go, look, how can we find a vehicle for Jimmy Carr? And you go, well, he might not want to do a sitcom. But wouldn't it be brilliant if we got, and they mentioned two quite well-known people who aren't like sitcom-based, to be the mother and father in a sitcom? And you go, but why? It doesn't matter. Yeah. But, you know, meanwhile, somebody who drives a van or some, you know, some fucking, some woman who delivers pizzas or something might have a brilliant sitcom. And you go, just give it a go. Just put it out and see what you think.
Yeah, you can tell if it's a good idea or not.
Yeah,
it doesn't need to have.
Thought so.
They kind of everything's got to be ready made now, has it? It's got to be, you've got to have all the. You've practically got to film the thing yourself, the pilot episode. You've got to do it yourself.
Yeah,
and then you've got to get, and then you've got to get interest. You've got to get your own interest. Find an audience. And then you take it to the TV people and go, I've got this. And they go, oh, brilliant. And then they take all the credit.
I don't know where we found them from. You found them being very successful, mate. That's what you found them.
Yeah, that's what you did. That's what you did. Gav, this has been lovely, mate.
Oh, is that it?
I've really enjoyed talking to you. Yeah,
halfway through,
man.
I was thinking, well, when are we going to start?
Is there anything you want to plug, mate?
Well, I'd just plug my sitcom, really.
Yes.
My sitcom is called I've Got a Job for You, Gav, and it's on Amazon Prime, which if you've got Amazon Prime, it's easy to find. You just type in I've Got a Job for You, Gav. Or if you type Gav, you'll find it. It's 3 episodes. Long episodes, that is. And loads of comedians are in it, and actors and things.
Brilliant.
You know, myself, Matty Reed, Sammy Dobson, Lee Kale, Rob Rouse,
lovely,
loads of us,
brilliant, what a brilliant bunch. That's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. Yeah, Prime Video.
Brilliant,
you can go and watch that.
Lovely, Gav. Thanks so much for coming on,
mate.
It's
been a real pleasure.
Insane in the membrane.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.